Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tetragon Investor Conference Call. All lines will be in listen-only mode throughout the whole conference. If anyone should require assistance during the conference, please press star followed by zero on your telephone keypad. Just to remind you, this conference call is being recorded. I would now like to hand over to your chairperson, Mr. David Wyshnau. Please begin your meeting, and I'll be standing by.
Thanks, Rupal. This is David Wyshnau, one of the principals of the investment manager of Tetragon Financial Group Limited. I'd like to welcome you to our investor call, which will focus on 2009 results and provide an update on progress to date. The format of today's call will be a bit different than our previous investor calls, as we have included a Q&A portion of the call based on investor feedback. Phil Bland, our CFO, will present Tetragon's 2009 results, incorporating Q4 annual audited financial statements. I'll provide a quick overview on our portfolio and key performance metrics, and then Jeff Herlin and Mike Rosenberg and I will go over questions we have received in the Q&A portion of the call. I'd like to remind everyone that the following contains forward-looking comments concerning performance and financial condition on the products and markets in which Tetragon invests. Our performance may change materially as a result of various possible events or factors. Let me now turn the call over to Phil.
Thanks so much, David, and welcome to everybody. I'd like to start this section by providing some high-level comments on the results for 2009, which are contained in the annual report and the audited financial statements on TFG's website. I'll then move on to make some specific comments about performance drivers. As always, further detailed questions on the financial statements can be sent to us at any time, and we'll attempt to answer them directly to you. As was expected, following a difficult end to 2008, 2009 proved to be a challenging year for TFG, although from a performance perspective, both in terms of the CLO investment portfolio and the earnings of the company, the year ended significantly more positively than it began. This year of contrasting halves was reflected in the company's net earnings. TFG experienced a loss of $441 million in the first 6 months before a recovery in the CLO investment portfolio provided the stimulus for positive earnings of around $126 million in the second half of the year, leaving a full-year net loss of $315 million or $2.50 per share. However, as we'll cover in more detail later, we were also able to deliver strong cash flows, maintain some level of dividend, and end of the year with promising signs of recovery. I'll now turn my comments to the statement of operations for TFG, which is also summarized on pages 14 and 15 of the annual report. Investment income, which is primarily driven by interest income for our investments, declined from $46 million in Q1 down to $33 million in Q3, then recovered to $41 million in Q4. That trend broadly reflected the evolution in the weighted average IRRs across the portfolio, because the deal-specific IRR drives the rate at which income is recognized on each investment. I should note that the change to the levels of income tend to lag a little bit behind the recalibration of the IRRs, so the 2009 year-end IRR increases will tend to be more fully reflected in Q1 2010. This approach is governed by ASC 325 within US GAAP, and there's further explanations in the notes to the financial statements. You can see in summarized form, though, on page 16 of the annual report, how the IRRs evolved during 2009, ending on a high for the year of 11.9%, up by 1.6% from Q3 2009, albeit down from the 2008 year-end level of 13.8%. The recent trend reflects, at least in part, improvements in the OC cushions in certain US deals in the portfolio, and David will give you some more color on the portfolio later in the call. Although investment income itself is clearly very important, as we've mentioned in previous calls, when reviewing the performance of TFG's investments, one needs to combine the interest income line with a change in the realized or unrealized value of investments further down the statement of operations. For 2009 as a whole, the combined number was a loss of $262 million, split into a first-half loss of $431 million and a second-half profit of $169 million, as underlying deal performance started to recover quite strongly. Operating expenses were down compared with 2008, as the paydown of all debt in Q1 2009 significantly reduced the interest expense to zero from Q2 onwards. Overall operating expenses in 2009 were just over $45 million versus around $58 million the prior year. And those represented 27% of investment income in 2009 versus 26% in 2008. Management fees, as you'd expect, scaled down in line with NAV, and administration fees also fell year on year. Performance fees were $29.8 million compared with $21.9 million in 2008, and David's going to cover this topic in more detail on the Q&A section of the call. I'd now like to spend a few minutes talking about the ALR Fair Value Adjustment, or ALR for short, which is described in detail on pages 9 and 10 of the annual report. On this call, I want to try to clarify a couple of points which seem to have been unclear to investors or analysts. And I must apologize if past explanations have not been clear enough, and re-emphasize that investors should continue to get in contact whenever they need further explanations. The first point of clarification relates to why the ALR was created and why it's needed. It was created in Q4 2008 and extended in Q1 2009 in order to reflect in TFG's fair value the considerable stress and uncertainty around the future cash flows and performance of our portfolio. Without it, we'd have not been reflecting an appropriate or reasonable fair value for TFG's portfolio, and it remains a necessary and not a discretionary, in our view, component of the fair value calculation. The ALR was determined by taking our base case modelling assumptions, which are detailed on page 9 of the annual report, and overlaying a more pessimistic set of short-term assumptions. These had the effect of significantly reducing the expected future cash flows. By overlaying the ALR fair value adjustment onto our base case model, it basically has the same effect as if we'd taken only our base case cash flows and instead applied a far higher discount rate to reflect the increased uncertainty around those cash flows. At the end of 2009, that effective discount rate as a result of the ALR was around 30%, to give you a benchmark, and we benchmarked that rate for reasonableness against market comparable data throughout the year. Even though our actual cash flows in 2009 tracked more closely to the base case projections than to our more pessimistic ALR case, the heightened uncertainty around TFG's future cash flows remains, and thus the ALR fair value adjustment is still required in our view. Any release of the ALR would have to be justified in the context of market benchmarks, similar to what I mentioned before, and would be done in consultation with TFG's independent audit committee. The second point I wanted to cover relates to the impact of the ALR on TFG's NAV, and particularly in 2009. The creation of new ALR means that reserves for potential future losses are increased, net income is therefore reduced, and thus NAV is reduced. So the ALR was increased by $290 million to $431 million in the first quarter of 2009, in anticipation of deteriorating performance, which we've covered on prior calls, of course. As that deterioration materialized in late Q1 and Q2, approximately $177 million of losses were experienced that had already been reserved for in the ALR. So, therefore, $177 million of the ALR was utilized, and that had no further impact on the NAV because we were drawing down on that reserve. Later in the year, as TFG's portfolio started to recover in the second half, rather than flow all of that improvement in value through to the NAV, we firstly reinstated roughly $95 million of the ALR. Now, this is all mapped out also in the table on page 9 of the annual report. And that shows that the ALR increased during the year by a net $208 million from $141 million to $349 million. There was no net release of the ALR, so none of the improvement in performance in the second half of 2009 was as a result of the release of the ALR back into the NAV. I'd like to turn now to our net assets and NAV per share. TFG's consolidated net asset value per share stood at $6.47 at the end of 2009, the highest point in the year, but down from $9.06 at the end of 2008, reflecting the overall performance discussed earlier, but also reflecting distributions to shareholders in the form of dividends primarily. From a cash flow perspective, the investment portfolio continued to be cash generative during the year, albeit at a reduced rate compared to 2008, as some investments ceased to generate cash flows to the equity. This was due, among other things, to underlying loan defaults and negative ratings migration, which again David will cover in more detail later. Total cash receipts of approximately $153 million, or $1.21 per weighted average share, compared to 2008's cash generation of $345 million, or $274 per weighted average share. Despite that year-on-year drop, TFG's cash flow enabled us to continue to pay a quarterly dividend through the most difficult period of the year, and we were pleased to be able to double the dividend for Q4 to 6 cents per share. From the end of Q1 2009, TFG continues to have no borrowings or corporate leverage. This self-financing status has been an important differentiator from certain peers, enabling TFG to avoid, among other things, having to be a forced seller of its investments. In summary, after a challenging first half of the year, 2009 ended on a generally optimistic note. The fourth quarter continued the upturn in performance of the portfolio, which began in Q3. Positive earnings of approximately $1 per share were recorded in the second half of the year, although, of course, as mentioned before, taking 2009 as a whole, we made a loss of $2.50 per share. Importantly, even through the stress of the first half of the year, the portfolio remained strongly cash generative. Early results from 2010 have been encouraging, and NAV per share grew in January by over 5%. That said, we remain mindful of the continued uncertain environment, which is likely to remain throughout 2010 and potentially beyond. With that, I'd like to pass back to David to comment on our portfolio and risk profile.
Thanks, Phil. Let me now quickly run you through a few portfolio and performance metrics, and then we'll spend most of our time focusing on the Q&A section of the call. At the end of 2009, our investment portfolio held 61 CLO investments managed by 32 different collateral managers, representing an estimated fair value of approximately $655 million. We recently purchased 6 CLO securities totaling $39 million notional in connection with the LCM transaction and another secondary piece in early 2010 as well. The portfolio continues to be diversified across underlying asset classes and geographies. Approximately 72% of the risk capital is invested in CLOs with primary exposure to U.S. broadly syndicated senior secured loans. 7% in CLOs with primary exposure to European broadly syndicated senior secured loans, and 21% in CLOs with primary exposure to U.S. middle market senior secured bank loans. On a look-through basis, Tetragon's exposure to senior secured leverage loans totals over 17.6 billion par value, spread across approximately 1,700 different corporate obligors, the substantial majority of which are U.S. names, with the balance being European. We continue to review our hedging strategy for credit exposure and FX principal risk on an ongoing basis, as we seek to address identified risks to the extent practicable and cost-effective, and in a cost-effective manner. I'd like to now update you on some key performance metrics that we remain focused on. Defaults. TFG's 2009 lagging 12-month corporate loan default rate was 6.5%. This is 30% below the 9.6% 12-month lagging institutional U.S. loan default rate as reported by S&P. At the end of 2009, 68% of our CLO investments were passing their most junior OC test, which compares favorably to the U.S. market-wide average of approximately 62%, as reported by Morgan Stanley in January in their CDO tracker report. At the end of 2009, the weighted average percent of corporate obligors rated triple C or below fell to 12%, comparing favorably to the market average of 16.5% as reported by Morgan Stanley. Now we'd like to turn to the Q&A portion of the call, but before doing so, we'd like to reiterate that we greatly value communication with the company's shareholders and strive to make ourselves available to answer questions to the extent that we are able. As always, investors and interested persons should feel free to contact us with questions. We recently asked that interested individuals submit questions that we could potentially cover on this update call. Based on our review, it appears that six investors and a few analysts submitted questions for this call. Given that the vast majority of the questions have essentially come from two investors and a number of the questions overlap, we propose to paraphrase or combine for the purposes of this call. Where appropriate, we can also discuss these directly with relevant investors, although we note that we are not able to necessarily address every matter that was raised. With that, let me turn it over to Mike.
This is Mike. We received several questions relating to the investment manager's performance fees. We appreciate the significant interest in this matter given recent developments and think it would be helpful to place the performance fee in an appropriate context of the performance of the investment manager as well as the business and the history of TFG. First, we believe that we have designed and managed the company to withstand an array of significant challenges and that TFG's performance, that our performance has demonstrated the value of the steps that the investment manager and TFG have taken to navigate the financial crisis, as well as the importance of the corporate structure of the company. As we have already covered in this call, the 2009 highlights included the maintenance of and an increase in dividends, strong cash flows, good performance in terms of deal metrics, the repayment of all corporate borrowings, the generation of value through the active use of TFG's majority positions, and then most recently, obviously, the purchase of LCM. And we believe it wasn't just the actions in 2009 that we took to help us navigate the financial crisis, but also the way we built the company. TFG's corporate structure and governance were designed to seek to position the company to best serve its investment objective, as well as to address a variety of relevant considerations, including applicable legal requirements. It may also be helpful to compare TFG to other businesses that seek to obtain exposure to leveraged loans. One could think of TFG as in several ways analogous to what we describe as the traditional brick-and-mortar commercial banks. We believe that with respect to the current primary business of obtaining exposure to the leveraged loan asset class, TFG is a more efficient owner of such loans than a bank. We have tried to make this point since the company's inception, including in connection with our IPO roadshow and investor and analyst presentations. We believe that the comparison is pretty straightforward. TFG shares a similar asset base with these commercial banks, floating rate senior secured bank loans. At the same time, however, we believe that TFG offers certain advantages over our view of the traditional brick-and-mortar commercial bank model. First, TFG's current CLO investments have long-term match funding compared to short-term customer deposits. Second, TFG can better diversify across portfolio managers, geographies, and industries. And then third, TFG's costs and expenses may be lower and largely variable compared to what we see as higher and often fixed costs associated with the traditional brick-and-mortar commercial bank. And it's that last comparative point that's worth highlighting. We see commercial banks as typically having costs as a percentage of its income north of 40% and often approaching 60%. Of course, in today's environment, with some banks producing very low or in some cases no income, that percentage may be considerably higher. In contrast, over the long term and various credit cycles, we would expect TFG's costs as a percentage of its income to run at a rate considerably lower than such a brick-and-mortar commercial bank. This is in part due to our view that compared to the traditional brick-and-mortar commercial bank, TFG has very material restrictions on its costs, such as the fact that the investment manager's compensation is bounded by a disclosed calculation methodology. TFG may, depending on the investor, also offer greater tax efficiency than the traditional brick-and-mortar commercial bank. We also note that many financial institutions in the market have seen significant reductions in their book value while continuing to pay their personnel in an effort to ensure they remain focused and their businesses remain competitive. In our view, some of these institutions have not weathered the financial crisis nearly as well as TFG has. In fact, many of the financial institutions, including those focused on leveraged loans, failed or needed to ultimately rely on bailouts from the government or their investors. TFG, in contrast, withstood the financial crisis challenges on its own as it was designed to do. In sum, we believe that we've designed TFG so that over the long term and various credit cycles, its cost structure, including the performance fee, should be in line or better than those businesses operating functionally equivalent enterprises. Finally, it's also important to note that the calculation methodology for the performance fee was carefully considered and publicly disclosed in connection with the company's IPO, remains published on the company's website, has also been described in the company's audited financial statements each year, and is unchanged since the company's IPO. In short, this is a mechanic that's been with us for quite some time. I'd note also that TFG's investment management arrangements were established with the support of the company's underwriters and were similar to several other vehicles listed around the same time, and we believe were designed to serve a permanent capital public company that would need to perform and remain competitive through difficult markets. For example, and as a starting point, we needed to account for the fact that the shareholders of the company would be changing on a daily basis as investors bought and sold shares. Furthermore, we believe that the rolling reference NAV serves the interests of the shareholders as it, among other things, seeks to promote effective investment management over the long term and through fluctuations in the market. It has the potential to provide continued incentive while also reducing the potential for excessive risk-taking or lack of attention. In short, we want to avoid TFG ever becoming an orphaned company. Finally, as you are aware, the investment management remains incentivized to grow the company's NAV and has sought to do so through effective management of the company, its investments, and operations, including its financing arrangements. We believe ultimately that improved NAV should correspond to an improving TFG share price for the benefit of all TFG shareholders. I'm going to hand it over to Dave now to talk about capital distributions and use of cash.
Thanks. Moving on. There were several questions relating to capital distributions, including dividends, as well as the company's share repurchase program. The questions generally asked, what are the company's plans for returning value to shareholders through dividends, share repurchases, or other means? We are very focused on these matters and are mindful of the company's investment objective of generating distributable income and capital appreciation. The company has sought to return value to its shareholders despite a very challenging market environment. In 2009, TFG maintained a quarterly dividend throughout the year, doubled its dividend in Q4 2009, and updated its share repurchase program to significantly increase the amount of shares the company may purchase on each trading day. The company will have paid total dividends of 15 cents for the year. During 2009, the company repurchased 2.4 million shares with a total value of over $6.5 million, which brought the total number of shares purchased under the share repurchase programs to 5.28 million shares. As of year end, we had over 4 million shares permitted to be purchased under the present program, and we would expect to renew the program in the fall of 2010. We believe that the present repurchase program offers several advantages compared to other repurchase mechanics, like, for example, a tender offer. The current program allows us greater flexibility in terms of not only share repurchases, but other potential uses of cash, such as investment opportunities, and allows us to be in the market on a regular basis, which also promotes liquidity of the shares. We believe the buyback program may also send the correct message to shareholders and the marketplace in regards to the value the shares offer at discounted levels to book value. The company's capital distribution program is set out in the annual report and on our website and covers matters previously set forth under the dividend policy section, as we believe the new program better describes the company's views on all capital distributions, including dividends. In sum, the investment manager's recommendation with respect to the declaration of dividends and other capital distributions may be informed by a variety of considerations, including the expected sustainability of the company's cash generation capacity in the short and medium term, the current and anticipated performance of the company, the current and anticipated operating and economic environment, and other potential uses of cash ranging from preservation of the company's investments and financial position to other investment opportunities we may see. I'd like to comment in particular on the sustainability of cash generation point, as that is a significant consideration. In late 2008 and early 2009, the company has faced an extremely challenging and uncertain operating environment with significant risks posed to its CLO investments, which represent the vast majority of the company's revenue-producing assets. Accordingly, it was appropriate to expect the company's CLO investment portfolio to produce less cash flow than it had in prior periods. A lower amount of expected cash flows and uncertainty surrounding such cash flows will obviously hinder the company's ability to make capital distributions, including dividends. This was the phenomena experienced in late 2008 and the first half of 2009, but which has recently begun to improve in the second half of 2009 and going into 2010, as one would expect to see with improving performance metrics already mentioned. We, of course, remain mindful that shareholders may desire an appropriate yield component from their TFG holdings. We believe our current yield compares favorably with financial firms in the loan market and certainly when compared to three-month LIBOR at 25 basis points. With that as background, it's important to emphasize again that the company continues to seek to return value to its shareholders, including through dividends and share repurchases, as well as explore other methods of returning capital to shareholders. Continuing on a related point, we received several questions on the company's use of cash and cash balances. In particular, we received questions ranging from what is the cash balance to what are the company's plans for its cash balance. Well, let's start with the basics. As of year-end 2009, TFG has no outstanding debt, and the net cash on the balance sheet increased to $151.6 million, which is cash on the balance sheet less net liabilities. We believe that a significant balance sheet cash position can be found in many of the world's best-run companies and is a significant positive for the company, as it will, among other things, enhance operating and investment flexibility and should serve as a strength of the company going forward, particularly with a still meaningful level of uncertainty surrounding the economic environment. And in turn, the company's cash flows and limited availability of existing financing alternatives, as well as the potential for attractive investment opportunities. We expect to continue to evaluate a variety of uses of deploying TFG's cash in a manner consistent with the challenges presented and TFG's investment objective. First, we believe that the LCM acquisition has been a good use of TFG's cash, and we expect to continue to explore other potential strategic acquisitions to grow our asset management platform, both within and beyond the CLO and loan market, as well as across new assets, asset classes, and strategies. We continue to examine various acquisitions that we believe could return a meaningful value to the company and its shareholders, and which may broaden the company's revenue-producing asset base. Second, TFG expects to continue to see attractive secondary CLO investment opportunities, and we have executed on these in Q1. Third, the end of 2009 offered evidence of the potential reopening of the new issue CLO markets, and the company may be able to capitalize on new issue CLO prospects during 2010 in order to grow LCM's business and add to its existing CLO investment portfolio. In addition, we'll continue to review opportunities to support TFG's existing CLO investments, and we'll explore investment opportunities in assets and asset classes within and beyond the leveraged loan market. Finally, and importantly, as discussed earlier, we intend to continue to serve our aim of returning capital to TFG shareholders. Those are the company's main potential uses of its cash going forward for 2010, and we will strive to choose a path that we believe best serves the interests of the company, a company that we believe may have significant potential to become more of a financial services firm that functions not only as an investment holding company, but also as an operating company, capable of pursuing attractive investment opportunities across multiple asset classes as part of its investment strategy and for the benefits of its shareholders. Let me turn it back to Mike to discuss the LCM acquisition.
Great, thanks. We did receive a few questions on this transaction, including what the impact of the transaction will be on TFG. I should first note that the transaction has been viewed very favorably by investors and analysts that we speak with. We are very pleased to have brought LCM on board, and the integration of that business into TFG has been going very smoothly. You'll recall that we purchased not just the LCM business, but several CLO securities with a face amount of $39 million for a purchase price of $10 million. This was an accretive transaction for the company. The purchase agreement provided that management fees earned by LCM and cash flows received from the CLO securities from and including August 16th, which in aggregate were approximately $9.4 million, less certain expenses of LCM totaling about $2.4 million, would accrue for the benefit of TFG. This was a very important feature of the deal that we began negotiating in mid-2009. As a result, the cash payment made by TFG for the LCM business and the CLO securities to consummate the transaction totaled approximately $3 million. Clearly, we're very pleased with the LCM transaction. First, we believe that the company may add an attractive asset management fee income stream, and there is good value in the CLO investments. And then second, we believe LCM has the potential to become a solid growth story for the company. In our view, the purchase of LCM positions TFG very well for continued consolidation in the CLO asset management market and potential recovery in the CLO new issue volumes. We see also opportunities to grow the business through the acquisition of existing CLO management agreements as well as potentially through the new issue CLO market. We'll seek to continue to grow LCM's business in a way that capitalizes on the available opportunities and leverages LCM's experience, expertise, investment style, and exceptional performance track record. Now, going back to TFG specifically, we also received questions asking whether there are any plans to list TFG on other public exchanges or otherwise improve the liquidity for TFG shares. As you are all aware, TFG shares are publicly traded solely on the Euronext Amsterdam Exchange. Now, by way of background, at the time of the company's initial public offering and in consultation with the company's underwriters and its legal and financial advisors, we concluded and continue to believe, after analyzing various listing alternatives within the United States and Europe, that Euronext Amsterdam is favorably suited to facilitate the company's investment objective and various relevant legal, regulatory, liquidity, and other commercial considerations. However, to give you a bit more background, at the time of our IPO, we looked into various structures that could possibly facilitate a U.S. listing, such as a BDC, Business Development Corporation, or a REIT. Each had significant downsides in our view for the business that we sought to build. For example, with respect to a REIT, we were uncomfortable with owning the minimum required percentage of real estate and/or mortgage-related assets. With respect to a BDC, there were various operational restrictions that would significantly impact our planned investment strategy. In addition, we felt that the requirement for both BDCs and REITs to pay out at least 90% of their taxable earnings would significantly restrict the company's flexibility in times of market stress. We believe that we made the right decision in structuring and listing the company the way we did. We do not currently expect to publicly list the company shares on another exchange. We do, however, continue to examine ways to improve liquidity for TFG shares, though. For example, improved analyst and brokerage coverage, investor communications, and non-deal roadshows. We believe these efforts have yielded positive results, as in 2009, the average daily trading volumes for TFG shares of approximately 150,000 shares on Euronext increased over five times from 2008. I'm going to hand it off to Jeff now to talk about portfolio and market questions.
Thanks, Mike. Let me start with our general views of the market, which we received a couple of questions on. Fundamentally, and although much uncertainty remains regarding this area, we believe 2010 will continue to see improvement in the leveraged loan and CLO markets. Any such improvement would likely correspond to a restoration of the overall structural strength and cash flow generation capacity of TFG's CLO investments. This optimistic view, though not without downside risks, reflects a number of positive fundamental and technical trends. Firstly, the financial performance of many leveraged loan borrowers has been on the mend as a result of successful cost-cutting measures and/or top-line revenue growth. Secondly, the wave of maturity extension, covenant amendments, and deleveraging measures executed by leveraged borrowers during 2009 has reduced the pipeline of distressed businesses at risk of near-term default. Equally important, the recovery prospects on defaulted loans are expected to continue to improve as a result of greater availability of exit financing, increased risk appetite, and recovery in capital markets activities in terms of both primary loan, high-yield bond issuance, as well as M&A and IPO activity. In addition, a continued deceleration in the pace of downgrades to CCC-rated levels or below and a return of loan prepayments closer to the average historical levels would be expected to have a positive effect on the overall performance of TFG's CLO investments, allowing for the restoration of previously incurred OC losses and the reinstatement of cash flows to equity tranches. We expect, however, that in line with 2009 trends, the performance of our European CLOs will continue to lag that of TFG's U.S. investments. Getting into some of the particulars, we received a few questions on our views of the prospect and impact of collateral coverage or OC test breaches in the company's CLO investments. This is clearly something that we monitor closely, as OC test breaches may result in a cessation of cash flow flows until the breach is cured. As you are aware, during 2009, numerous CLO transactions, including those owned by the company, failed to comply with their certain OC tests and accordingly ceased to generate cash flows to the subordinated note holders or equity tranche holders. That being said, we think the company's CLO investment portfolio weathered this particular storm very well compared to the market averages and has recently shown signs of improvement. As of December 31st, 2009, approximately 68% of TFG's CLO investments were passing the most junior OC tests, an increase from 60% at the end of Q3 09 and comparing favorably with the U.S. market-wide average of approximately 62% of U.S. CLOs estimated to be in compliance with the junior OC tests at the end of 2009. Let's turn our views on OC test breaches going forward. In line with our generally positive view of the loan and CLO markets in 2010, we are hopeful that 2010 should also exhibit some improvement in the OC levels of TFG's CLO investments. Accordingly, we would expect the cash flows of the company's CLO investment portfolio to also show improvement from 2009. We remain mindful, however, of the difficult and uncertain environment. Many of the company's CLO investments remain in breach of their applicable OC tests or may otherwise breach such a test in the event of further economic or loan market decline or other significant market disruptions. In summary, we believe that an improving economic environment and the potential benefits to the senior secured loan market will result in an improvement in OC levels and breaches, but there remains significant downside risk. We also received questions on our views on the new issue and secondary CLO markets. For example, do we expect the new issue CLO market to improve, and do we see attractive secondary trades in CLO equity? On the first point, we are cautiously optimistic. that the new issue CLO market will show improvement in 2010, and if so, we hope LCM and TFG can benefit from that development. We continue to explore with relevant market participants various investment transaction structures that could lead to interesting investment opportunities in a new new CLO market issuance. On the latter question, we expect to continue to see attractive investment opportunities in the secondary CLO market, particularly in secondary CLO equity, which we believe has generally lagged the rally in both CLO debt and senior secured loan prices. We were pleased with the CLO securities we purchased in connection with the LCM transaction and also recently executed on another secondary CLO equity trade. We have sought further transactions with managers with whom the company has an existing and positive relationship, such as LCM. Finally, we received a few questions on the company's ability to influence any of its particular CLO investments. We are pleased to report that our majority or significant positions have provided the company with the ability to influence certain of its CLO investments. In 2009, we did so on 12 different occasions, and we are seeing such opportunities in 2010. Most noteworthy, TFG's majority CLO equity investments with LCM were a significant factor in influencing discussions leading to the successful acquisition of LCM. On several other occasions, the company was a key voting constituency for the approval of a collateral manager change of control or collateral management agreement assignment. In such instances, TFG was able to obtain significant economic benefits or structural improvements. Another question surrounded our ability to force the liquidation of a specific CLO. Typically, the ability to force the liquidation of a CLO resides with the debt tranche investors of a CLO and only upon the declaration of an event of default. An EOD in a CLO is governed by a collateral coverage test that would require substantial losses before this test is breached. Most CLOs today remain well within compliance of this test. However, we may have the option, as a majority equity owner, to call the CLO after a non-call period, in which case the manager would sell the collateral and pay off all the debt tranches, with the equity tranche receiving what's left over. Clearly, this would be done only if economically beneficial to us as the equity investor, and we would weigh many variables in choosing to exercise this call, including keeping the deal outstanding and taking advantage of the CLO's existing inexpensive cost of financing versus new financing then available in the market. We will continue to seek opportunities to benefit from these majority positions and have already seen further opportunities from this feature of our strategy come our way in 2010. Regarding the disclosure of our specific CLO equity investments, we do not publicly disclose our individual CLO equity investments. Hopefully, you will understand that disclosing such could diminish our ability to maximize the value of the investment, including the value attributable to our majority positions, which we have just discussed. We believe that our current disclosure policy is in the best interest of the company and its shareholders. And with that, this brings an end to the Q&A portion of the call. I hope you found it helpful and would like to turn it back to David.
Thanks, Jeff. That's the end of our call. Again, we'd like to just thank everyone for taking the time to join in today. As always, do not hesitate to contact us directly with any further questions you may have. We look forward to speaking with you in the future. Thanks, everybody.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes today's conference. You may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.